Now we get to welcome two of my favorite people, Sylvia Ulloa, who is local and at one point was the Sun News editor I sent my columns to, and Ron DeHarport. Don't play bridge against him, but he is also the, Sylvia is the executive director of CAFE now, an organization that's done a lot of good work here, including forcing the minimum wage in the city of Las Cruces. And Ron is the treasurer of the ACLU, state of Minnesota, and they're doing a lot of good things right now. So welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Want to talk with you in turn about what's happening, good and bad, about immigration. But first of all, from both your vantage points, I guess I'll start with Ron because you're more of a guest. You're okay. Usually further away. But how are people feeling and dealing with this in Minneapolis?
Well, Peter, it's a terror situation up there. I could tell you some stories. I will tell you some stories. All my kids, seven of them, live up there, and of course they all have friends and relatives. And it's surprising how frightened they are.
They're not
real poor people, but they have friends that are Hispanic, for one thing. One family doesn't leave the house because they're afraid that ICE will grab them. I don't know their legality. I suspect they're not legal, but I don't know that. We have a cleaning lady who is very legal, a citizen. She's been a citizen for 30 years. And she was stopped, taken in, held for 2 days, 2.5 days, and released. Nobody really ever said anything to her except they asked her name, and they must have checked it out and found out. But she was held overnight for two nights in the city jail. And we have a big Somali community up there, and we have the largest Hmong community in the United States. Over 40,000 immigrants and next generation, and they're scared because they get grabbed. So it's a frightening situation there.
One of the things that moved me most, and you steered me to an article that in National Press that talked about a school that has mostly Hispanic kids, and where the attendance was incredibly perfect because of whatever they've done to try to encourage kids to be there, and the records are good, and all of a sudden 60% of the kids are at home. They've had to go to all remote learning, and which of course doesn't include theater or football or anything else. Sylvia, what would you tell people about how people in Doñana County are experiencing this?
I think just to kind of get back a little bit to what are the bright spots of immigration, I would say that New Mexico has sort of been a beacon of humanity in this conversation. Just recently, the governor signed HB9, which is essentially paving the way to eliminate our private prison system for immigrants. For anybody who is just in has been snatched up by ICE for civil immigration offenses, right? So being in the country without documentation. I think the other thing that is really good for all of our citizens in New Mexico is that it included provisions for local law enforcement not to work with ICE and with the federal government, which cannot be trusted at this time. And so those are really good provisions. That's, it's safeguarding people's ability to get treatment here. It's making sure that people feel like they can call the cops if they are, threatened or there's a crime. So those are really good things. And stuff is moving in our legislature that is going to do more protections for, all brown people and for New Mexicans in general, with the driver privacy bill. So I think those are really good. I don't think, though, that things are not good anywhere in the country. We know that, people are afraid to leave their houses. People don't we're hearing some that there, you know, people aren't sending their kids to school or things, not to the extent that we're seeing in places like Minnesota where there's really big stuff. But we have organizers and groups in Chaparral, New Mexico, and it's pretty regular enforcement. I think when you think about Las Cruces, we're hearing less and it's a little bit more targeted. But, you know, that those things are happening there.
Before we leave the Immigrant Safety Act, are there specific legislators you'd like to give a shout out to?
Well, for sure, I would say Angelica Rubio has been working on some form of this bill for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Like as soon as she got into the legislature, and she has been pushing that ways to really decriminalize and really profit off of people's detention. And then I would say, you know, Senator Cervantes. I mean, he really had a change of heart.
He did.
And he was what I really, you know, I'm going to give him some props for. He was like, well, I was wrong. Mm-hmm. I was wrong and I regret it. And now we're changing this.
What did he articulate about what changed his mind or heart about this?
I would say that he was very surprised at the opacity. Like the hiding of conditions there, mm-hmm. like that they wouldn't let him in to see them. And I think, you know, he's a senator and he's been there for a while. And I think he was just like, I'm a senator. You should let me in. And they were like, no. And then they let the Republican legislators in to tell a nice story about what things are like in there. And I think that sort of made him rethink what he had been told before.
Where was that they didn't look?
You can go. No.
At the Opero Detention Center that was housed, the immigrant population. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They let Republicans, it sounds like the governor's conference in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I could actually ask also just about detention, because detention in our area, right, at the Otero Detention Center exists, but also just right across state lines in Texas, right? Mm-hmm. The federal government decided that they're going to build a camp to house immigrants. And I'm just curious if there's any overlap with folks who have been detained here or who are arrested here in New Mexico. Do we know if they're getting sent there? Do we know where they're being sent? How y'all are supporting them?
So right now, it's a huge system and they move people around all the time. Right. We know people that are in Otero that get moved to El Paso, to Camp Montana, East Montana. Mm-hmm. We have gotten a lot of calls from Minnesota for people who are being detained here in Otero County and El Paso. And like people are calling our folks to say, hey, can you bail out my person?
Oh, wow.
You know, we don't know when they're being released. And, you know, I don't know that we can nail down rumors that people are just being left outside. I don't know that that's true, and we haven't been able to verify that. And so, but we do have folks from all over the place. They get moved around a lot. I know that there's a lot of worry about us closing these detention centers and they're going to get moved somewhere else. I mean, that's the reality.
Well, right, they'll
it's,
have to be, right?
It's the absolute reality, but we are not profiting off of people's misery. And I think that that's a moral victory for New Mexico.
One of the kids from that school I was mentioning got shipped, and I think illegally, I think he was a citizen, but they shipped him to a detention center in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ron, what are you guys doing in this regard?
Well, we've brought several court cases that are progressing through the system. It takes a while to get through the system. Mm-hmm. One is a case called Husan versus Noam, Christy Noam, the Secretary of Homeland Security, right? That's her title? Yeah. Yeah.
So far.
As of today.
This was a case just like we've been talking about where somebody was snatched off the street. Mm. They were a citizen, but they were deported to Texas. And they claimed that it was a clerical error and so forth. And it possibly was. But we sued, mm-hmm. and they were released, but it took, I think it was 10 days it took to straighten this whole thing out. And this poor person was a 39-year-old mother of four that was just literally walking down the street. And she looked suspicious, apparently, to the ICE agents, and they just took her in, asked her for identification. She gave them identification. They took her to the county jail, and not the Hennepin County Jail, which is where Minneapolis is, but a county jail in one of the smaller towns around where the authorities cooperate with ICE. Mm. In Minneapolis and St. Paul and most of the suburbs around the city, the police will not cooperate with ICE. They will not hold the people they bring in. she was taken just the next day, and she was gone. And her family tried to contact her, and it took them 2 or 3 days to contact him. Anyway, we sued on that, and the important part of that is that we established a precedent. We got a federal court order on it, and that that gives us ammunition. The next time it comes up, we can say, well, in Husan versus Noam, this is what happened, and the same thing's going to happen here, and it's not going to look good for you. The personal interaction between the citizenry and the ICE agents is interesting. There's 2,000 ICE agents now in Minneapolis. They're having difficulty in just operating their lives. Many motels won't rent to them. Mm-hmm. Many restaurants won't feed them. They're bunking two or three to a room because they can't get enough rooms. I talked to the governor's office yesterday, and it looks like they're going to start. They've already taken 700 out mm-hmm. last week, and now they're going to take out more. They don't know how many. They don't know when. But we have another case, similar case, where someone was illegally detained. This was a non-citizen, but they wouldn't release. That they didn't release. So we sued. The suit is now before the federal court, and no decision has been made on it yet. It's a long time, but we're hopeful on that one. So we're doing a lot of those kind of things. The ACLU, of course, we always say our client is the Constitution. So we don't go out looking for clients. People come to us, or their attorneys do. And, of course, most of these people don't have attorneys. They don't even have any way to contact an attorney. So we don't see more than a fraction of what's mm-hmm. happening. We see a lot on television. People are gunned down in the streets. Mm-hmm. We've had, as everyone knows, two murders by ICE.
Let me go back to something you said a moment ago, which was talking about the interaction between people there and ICE that's been basically, let's say, unwelcoming would be a umbrella term.
Yeah.
To what extent, obviously you don't know, we're not being told by the people who make decisions, by Kristi Noem or right. whoever's telling her what to do, but you kind of wondered if they were retreating, withdrawing a lot of people because they just killed a bunch of people and got bad press around the country, but maybe it's more the practical impact of just the citizenry not uprising violently, but just spilling coffee on their laps or whatever.
I think it might mostly be the polls. I think when the government, and Trump in particular, sees his approval rating dropping on his key issue, the thing that got him elected, he starts to wonder. And even he will back down in some cases. And I think that's kind of what's happening. The interrelationship between the populace and the ICE agents is 90%. I come to these numbers, obviously, picking numbers out of thin air, but I've talked to my kids who have been out protesting and demonstrating, and one of them was there when Pretty was shot that morning, that Saturday morning, was a block away. They say that they try to talk to this. Dave, he tries to talk to these agents, and he says 90% of them won't even, you know, mm-hmm. they insult, you get away from me, you know, that kind of thing. But he says there are a few who actually will talk, and really don't make much of a case for why they're there. They just kind of hang their head, sort of.
Well, they told me to get here.
Right. But that's rare, according to people on the street.
Yeah, well, I mean, in consideration of all that, I'm wondering if they're moving or they're leaving Minnesota, you know, if we have any indications of when they're going to go next, right? Because I don't anticipate that people are going to be out of a job.
Well, right?
Yeah,
we know a few things that we don't know. We can guess.
Yeah.
It'll be a Democratic state or city.
Yeah.
It'll probably be a, quote, sanctuary city.
Okay.
Which is, their definition of a sanctuary city is one that where the authorities won't cooperate with the federal government.
Yeah. So, well, with that in mind, after we signed HB 9, do you think then New Mexico is going to be a target?
I don't know. I mean,
that's a good question.
Yeah.
It's a really good question. I think that was those fears have been mm-hmm. some of the fears that our legislators, that our local lawmakers consider about, like, policies that they do. Like, some people want to be under the radar about how vocal to be protective mm-hmm. of immigrant communities. And so I think that that's a consideration. I mean, I think you kind of have to have a big place to, I mean, it has to be highly visible. I mean, I could maybe see Albuquerque. It has to really be a city to make the impact, right? I mean, and part of this is PR. It's propaganda.
Right.
Like, this is to strike fear in people. And, like, right. I mean, to be honest, if you're thinking about Las Cruces or places down here, we don't have a big media environment. It's That's not true. Visible.
That's true.
We don't have that many people.
Yeah.
And so I look at it, I mean, just in practical terms, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that everyday enforcement is not happening and cruelty. The one thing that I would say is, like, wherever they move these people, I think we need to, like, there's been some talk about, well, we need to send Border Patrol back to the border. And,
well, they haven't got anywhere.
That's right. And the other thing is that I think that we have to be careful, because when we put that kind of rhetoric out there, we're saying that the horrible things that happened in Minnesota, it's okay to be in border communities. Mm. And those tactics, a lot of those tactics come from Border Patrol.
Yeah.
And, you know, those abuses that happen don't get publicized as much
right.
as they are in these big blue cities. And so we have to be really careful about the rhetoric of, like, well, we just need to send Border Patrol back to the border and have them secure our border. Yeah, but also we need to keep an eye on the tactics that they're using. And I'm going to say this is just my own personal opinion, but I look at the impunity that they've allowed in ICE and in Border Patrol and CBP, so Customs and Border Protection. I think that is poisoning those agencies. Like, if you allow that to happen, people think it's acceptable, and then they're going to continue doing it. And those people are eventually going to come back to the, you know, New Mexico border, to the Rio Grande Valley in Texas, to California, to Arizona. And that is going to redound on our people that are here, that are not going to be able to escape, that they're not going to be able to push back. And so I think we need to be really cognizant, like, the whole country really needs to be thinking about, is this what we want? And when we talk about border protection, is this the kind of border protection that we're looking at? So I think that's something that we really need to be cognizant about. It has to be part of the an ongoing conversation about what is the culture that this is creating within these agencies. And, like, you know, do we need ICE at this point? You know, I'm going to, you know, I think there's a lot of people in this country that are like, abolish ICE. And this is a really corrupted agency. And there has to be a real reckoning after this is all over. And, you know, I am hopeful that it's all going to be over. But, we cannot let things just go back to the way they were.
That's very well said, Sylvia. I think that's exactly right. It's part of the reason that Minnesota was selected by Trump, and I believe that he would probably personally said, get those people, is because Walz, who said some, our governor, who said some pretty bad things, or critical things, shall we say, in a forceful way.
Set them well.
Yeah. Trump hates him. He hates the mayor of Minneapolis, a guy by the name of Jacob Frey, who's been very forward in trying to protect immigrant rights. That's part of it, I think. They announced the other day they were cutting, the federal government is cutting $600 million in health care benefits in four states. Of course, the states are Minnesota, Washington, Virginia, and New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
It's really hard to think of a time in our history when there's been any president of progressive or reactionary, whatever he might be, has discriminated that way, that extensively among the states. And, of course, the governor's conference is a great example this week. But let me ask a sort of follow-up question. You've just described ICE as an agency that's out of control. Sounds like, they were trying to enforce and they got accidentally got excessive. I don't think that's true.
Accidentally?
No.
I think number one, it's very clear that their attitude toward the way to decrease illegal immigration is take anybody who looks as if they might be an immigrant from a country where a lot of people come from who are illegal, just terrorize them. And the more you terrorize anybody who looks Hispanic, the fewer Hispanics are going to come here unless they absolutely have to.
Mm-hmm.
But let me ask you, I think that part's obvious. The part that's a question is, to what degree is this designed not only to intimidate all the Hispanics, but to intimidate all of us in preparation for doing whatever they may want to do in November of 2026 to countermand the elections?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a hard question to answer. We got the only history we have on this, we have to look back 80 years, 90 years to the early 30s in Germany, where we saw similar.
Yep.
Gradual, but by gradual, I mean over a period of a few months. And suddenly the next election didn't happen.
Yep.
I'm not saying that, that Trump's a Nazi necessarily,
he's not that smart.
But the direction we're going should be scary to every American that has any respect for our history.
What can we do other than obviously contribute to the Minnesota
ACLU
and to CAFE?
Yeah.
Well, I would say, for one, I think that one way that we can sort of protect our communities is to understand what our rights are, right? To understand and also knowing what our rights are and when they are being violated and how we react in that manner, right? So, like, we've had to really rethink Know Your Rights at CAFE because we see with our eyes that those rights are being violated. And so how do we do that? Part of that is like getting more information. If you're a business or you're a clinic or you're a school, posting privacy signs that say you can't come back here without a warrant. And I would just invite the public to say, if you want to know more about that, you want to know more how to protect either your patients or your customers or your employees, reach out to CAFE where we can do that services. We can provide signs
give
for you
folks
if you'd like.
A website or a phone number or whatever you want to.
Sure. So CAFE, you can call us at CAFE at 575-524-0897 and you can get us on the internet at organizenm.org. So organizenm.org. And, you know, we are happy to take resources out there. We're also working directly to get legal services to people, to do, like, powers of attorney if you have children who are U.S. citizens and you are, you know, undocumented. So,
Ron, how would people contribute to the Minnesota ACLU?
Well, we have a website, a national website. You contribute to the ACLU in New York, the national organization. Mm-hmm. We have 40-some chapters around the country, or you can contribute directly. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter who you can, because we split. If we get $100, $50 goes to New York and vice versa. So it doesn't matter where you go. Speaking of contributions, though, since January 1, we have in Minnesota, not counting national, although it's happening there too, I know, we have tremendous number of dollars that have come in, record squared, because people, the average person on the street sees this happening, they see what's happening on television, they ask the same question you did, what can we do? And the answer is, I don't know. Know your rights is certainly
something
important.
Yeah.
Here's something you can do. You can send them $20 or $50 or $10,000. That happens.
What is CAFE doing these days? You're famous locally for the minimum wage in Las Cruces, but very briefly because we're running out of time.
Yeah, for sure. We're really like trying to roll out more services for immigrants. I think that we're doing a lot of the traditional things we do. How do we uplift communities? How do we create economic justice? We're working specifically on a workforce development commission that just got passed yesterday by the county. So fighting the fight for sure.
Well, thank you both for doing what you're doing and for joining us today.